It's like Microsoft missing the internet, Google missing social. It's classic innovator's dilemma. But the challenge, what Apple had going for it, is there was another killer product on the horizon that they could launch. And if it's not the Vision Pro goggle things, it's obviously not the car, because they've said they're killing it. Like, what else is there? At some point, you can only affix so many other devices to your body.
Hey everybody, Roland Frazier and Ryan Dice here with another episode of Business Lunch. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing amazing, although I did not just get back from a Norwegian adventure seeing French kissing wolves and watching the Northern Lights. You did, however. So,
I did.
Number one, happy birthday.
Thank you.
That was your big boy birthday trip. How was Norway?
Norway was amazing. I would definitely go back. Loved the country. Loved the people. Easy to be there. Pretty much everybody spoke English, which, you know, is good and bad. But the people were really friendly. The food was great. Everything was really high quality. I was really like the quality of, you know, the food and the buildings and everything. It was really well done, well organized place, and the scenery there. You know, being on the coast and having all of the coolness of that, plus the Viking culture, plus the mountains and snow. It was awesome. I would highly recommend it. My wife had wanted to go through the fjords forever, and we didn't want to do it on a big commercial boat, but we did want to be on a boat because I think it's much better to be down in there than it is on the sides. And so we rented a boat, and we were there for
a boat. You make it sound like you like got a rowboat with like a trolling motor. Like you had a freaking yacht with like a private chef and a masseuse and all this stuff on it. So
okay, yes, we had a yacht. We had a ship, not a boat. Okay,
yes,
but anyway, it was really cool because we were able to go down all the little fingers and see lots of cool things, but only a fraction of it. And then this year the Northern Lights were apparently some of the best in generations and the best that is going to be for a while. So we were smack dab in the middle of that. And while we really only had about three nights that we got to see it when we were up north enough, when we went up over the Arctic Circle. And but my goodness, it's something to see. And it's you just kind of stand there like, you know, wow, that's take it in. And you can't possibly, even though you get great pictures of it and everything, you just can't possibly convey how cool and the magnitude of it, which is fun.
Yeah, but then you sent me the pictures in the video and I knew, I was like, this is amazing. And I know that it's maybe a tenth of what it is. Like anybody who's traveled, like if you go to the Grand Canyon, you know, I mean, this is a generic example where you take a picture and you go and you look at it and you're like, it's definitely a picture, but that's not what I saw.
Yeah. I remember for any outdoor thing, like Africa, Grand Canyon, wherever you are. And I remember even I was in Brazil by myself on that Cristo, is it Sugarloaf or something like that, where the big Christ statue is. And I was standing there taking a picture of it. And I looked at my picture on my camera and I looked back up at it and I was just like, that probably more than any other time hit me. I was like, how can you just, why can't the camera get this, you know, but it doesn't. So yeah, it was something, but,
and not to be too like old man yelling at the clouds, cause that, like that's true. And yet when you think about the way that most people are experiencing life, they're experiencing life with their phone up in front of their face, trying to get the picture, you know, and it's really kind of sad. Like they're out there experiencing, and it's one thing to lift up and say, I'm going to take a picture of this, but there are people who will basically experience an entire concert, right, with their phone in front of their face. And so they're basically looking at what somebody
or
else
their kids, like their kids events. That one, when I had nieces and nephews that were like really young and they were on the hockey travel team and stuff like that. And all the parents are there capturing every moment, which I don't think they're ever going to watch. But they weren't like, you know, in the reality of the thing. So yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So sit back, go someplace cool and just maybe watch, snap a quick pic so you can remember the place. So it shows up as a memory on your phone or, you know, you post it to Facebook or the gram or something like that, but bask in it, live in it.
It'll be interesting to me to see, I got the, is it Vision Quest? Is whatever the Apple thing is?
Yeah. Apple Vision. I don't think it's Quest. I think it's Apple Vision.
I got it, and I tried it, and it's really cool, and I like the mixed reality component of it, but it didn't really have anything yet. But my hope is, because I found it to be very comfortable compared to the Quest or whatever the other ones that I've got are, and it was definitely more cool, of course, because it's Apple, but also just like it was comfortable, the head thing and everything. It messes up your hair, but I don't really care. I've got to think that is probably going to capture these big things, like to allow you to experience them much, much more like they really are. So it'll be kind of fun to see what happens with it. I was kind of disappointed though, because I put it on and I played with the things that were in the App Store, and then it was like, okay, that's it. So I don't know. That was, well, you know, what, a month ago when it came out, but it'll be interesting to see if they evolve that somewhat, because it was really cool, but it was also not particularly useful. You know,
everybody, it's one of those things, everybody talked about it for the first like week or two, and now nobody is. I'm hoping that it sticks around long enough for the technology to get good enough, for the form factor to shrink down enough so that it becomes a thing. Yeah. But my fear is that Apple is going to bail on it.
They're pretty in it. You think so?
I don't know, man. Their growth is stalling out. I think people are getting a little bit, they killed the car. Do you see Apple killed the Apple car? They finally officially announced what everybody knew to be true, which is we have a car. We've been working on it. It's like they announced officially that they had it, only to then say, and we're killing the project. And sort of like they did that, mirroring a little bit of what Zuckerberg did when Zuckerberg said, hey, we're going to start, you know, investing less in the whole metaverse concept and putting a lot more into AI. And they were rewarded with much higher stock valuations. And so there's some speculation that maybe that's what Apple was doing with the car. And it didn't really seem to do much.
I think also Apple, like Google, got caught with their pants down a bit. You know, like they were far ahead of the curve with Siri back in the day, and then just drop the ball completely. And then it's like, oh, this AI thing, it's a thing, you know?
It's like Microsoft missing the internet, Google missing social. It's classic innovator's dilemma. But the challenge, what Apple had going for it, is there was another killer product on the horizon that they could launch. And if it's not the Vision Pro goggle things, it's obviously not the car, because they've said they're killing it. Like, what else is there? At some point, you can only affix so many other devices to your body.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like it's the TV. Like everybody has one. The Apple TV, I think it's number 4 now, is fantastic. But it's, God, they just destroyed the user interface recently. It was really great. Now it's like, you have to go to the store for this. And then you're like, why? And then you click the store and you're at the store. And who thought of that? Like, who thought that was a good idea to change from what they had? Anyway, but everybody's, you know, everybody's got a TV or two or three. And to me, why the hell don't you do with that what you did with the iPhone? Because they're still terrible. And you're, you know, now you've got all these TVs that have all these apps on them, but they're not the right app store. You know, Apple should just do a TV, and they would sell billions of them, you know?
No, you're right. Everybody craps on the TV. Like, oh, it's all about the screen. Nobody's watching TV anymore, except, yeah, they are. Everybody's got it, and we're all still watching them. So
we've got both.
I don't
know
that they know how, man. I don't
know
that
I know has the big TV, and everybody in the room has also got the small thing, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, and this is a culture thing, right? I don't know that Apple has the same culture of innovation that they once had. You know, it's when you think about all businesses do three things. They make stuff, they sell the stuff they make, and they fulfill the stuff they sold. And any business is going to be defined, their core value chain is going to be defined by one of those three things. Hmm. You know, obviously Amazon is primarily defined by their fulfillment abilities. The fact that you buy anything, we can get it to you. Certainly, I mean, there's companies that are very much, you know, defined by, for better or worse, their ability to sell stuff. That's the one that eventually, you know, isn't as long lasting. But the ability to innovate, the ability to come up with new product ideas, that was really what made Apple from day one. Like, it was always about that. And yet you haven't really seen it. And it's been run by obviously a very competent CEO and Tim Cook, but not
not a creative,
not a bastion of innovation. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't. I'm not an Apple shareholder because I don't hold a lot of public stocks. But I don't know. I'd be nervous. I see him killing the car. It's like they've decided that they're gonna back off of that innovation. I think the only thing that keeps them in the vision for an extended period of time, if it's not working in the short term, is that they can point at that and say, look, we're innovating. But
I think the car was actually a smart move, though, because I don't, and maybe they did, but CarPlay being the operating system for a car, to me, is a way better way to go than to have plants and, you know, if they're electric cars, then you got to have a battery plant and all this other stuff. I think rather than getting into that tremendous hole of, money hole that or money pit, I guess it is. I think that being the company that can sell and license the technology to everybody is smart, and that they will, that like, if you think about the operating system to the manufacturers of computer hardware, I think if Apple can be that in the car space, that's a better place for them. Because I like CarPlay, but it could certainly be better, and it could certainly do a lot more systems-wise to the rest of the car, and maybe that could empower a lot of people who aren't making cars now to know that that's all taken care of, license that, and you know, now you've got car clones like you had, you know, PC clones back in the day. Be interesting to see.
Yeah, I do think this wasn't what I was planning on talking about today, by the way. I think it's a good discussion, though. And so if we're going to say like action item-y, I think it's important to ask yourself, what is the primary kind of value driver? Where does the value in your business rest today? Does it rest on your ability to create and always have the newest, latest, greatest stuff? You know, so are you more innovation driven? Is your value driven primarily by your ability to market and sell better than everybody else in your category? I know I've had, you know, we've owned companies where we had an advantage there. I do think that's the first one that goes away because it's public by nature, right? You know, when you're doing your marketing advertising, you're doing it up for all to see. So it's easily knocked off, but maybe it's that. Or is it fulfillment? Is your customer experience perspective so amazingly great that's where the value really, you know, rests in your business? I think asking yourself, where is it today and where do we think it should be tomorrow, and making sure you're doubling down on that area is important. Because if you find that like, oh, we're not particularly great at any one of these three areas, then boy, you're going to get disrupted. Like it's going to happen. It may take a while if you're Apple, but it's going to happen. Anywho, I want to talk about something different.
Well, actually, let's follow up on that because we're, I think, okay, 11 or 12 minutes in. So this I think can be its own episode, and then we'll talk about the other stuff. But kind of going back to what you were just saying, you and I were talking as we were catching up pre-turning on the record button about that in our businesses as well. So we create and invent and hopefully innovate and put our stuff out there, and then lots of other people start doing those things too, and then everybody's doing and saying the same thing. And I was talking with you about, like, I got back from really not looking at work stuff for pretty much almost a month, and then looking at my emails, and I'm like, you know, it's all very, very, very similar. Dare I read them live? Let's see. Like if I go to it, maybe they'll be far more interesting now, but, I've got, let's see, get into the right account. Let's see. I've got money stuff. Silence is not security. And, Marketing Brew and Final Spots Closing Soon in Josh Marsden's program, and Black Swan, How to Talk to Companies and Read Them for Negotiations, and James Camp, Win a Profitable Niche Website, and David's Prompt Master, Follow This Simple Path to Success, and on and on and on. And sometimes it's really funny. Sometimes I read that stuff and I can't read everyone fast enough because I'm like voraciously trying to consume everything there is about something. And sometimes, like right now, I look at that stuff and I'm like, yeah, that's all just so much the same stuff. There's nothing new. There's, you know, it's all the, they're all saying the same thing. They're all selling the same thing. How do you get out of that to rise above the noise? Or is that just me coming back from vacation and being, you know, grumpy because I don't want to look at it right now? What do you think about that?
I think the way that you're viewing it coming back from vacation is the way that we should assume all of our prospects and customers are viewing our stuff at all times, right? Because you have far more patience and tolerance for marketing and for sales messaging and for new ideas because we're in the business of figuring out what's working right now. So we can get a little meta with it. We can be like, oh, you know, I don't necessarily care about this, but I like the way they did it. That's not normal. But that's not normal. Like,
yeah.
We, you know, we're weird from that perspective. So no, I think what you're getting is a glimpse, a better picture of what everybody else is experiencing, you know, at all times. And that's why I don't believe that over time, the advantage is not on the sales and marketing piece. It is if you do one thing differently than what everybody else does. Because what you're talking about there is emails. And look, we're guilty of this as well. Emails and messaging that are all about the ask. You know, look at this thing because I want you to click a link because I want you to go to the form, give me money or fill out a form and talk to somebody who will then ask you to give me money. It's all heavily transactional. There are very few messages that brands are paying, and that's an important distinction, paying to put out into the ether that are truly designed to just give value. And value takes on a lot of things. It could be entertainment, it could be content, but most of the time we're not making those investments. Some brands are, and this can be everything from the funny Super Bowl commercial that makes us laugh to paying to amplify really good, high quality content that just makes people go, holy crap, that's awesome. But there's not much of that going on out there. And I think there's not much because it's not trackable from an ROI perspective. It's not immediately measurable. You don't see it coming in. I think everybody right now is scared because the government isn't giving away free money anymore. Interest rates are higher than they were. People aren't spending as much as they were. And so now we're getting more demanding that our sales and marketing produce the immediate results. So people aren't investing in relationships anymore. So the way to look different is to do just that. But most people don't have the courage or the cash flow or the cash reserves to pull it off.
I wonder how you do it in email, because like you can definitely, I see on YouTube, it's, I pretty much spent most of my internet time while I was traveling on YouTube because it's much, much more value driven and more personalized. Even though it's mass communications, it's more like a sharing of things. And I think X or Twitter can be like that as well. Yeah. Even though I find it a little bit harder to find the value there. There's a ton of smart people there. It's just, I haven't yet really got, how do I organize those tweet storms and things like that into usable things without it taking a lot of my time. But YouTube for sure, a 10, 20, 40 minute video where I'm learning, feel like the person's sharing some of their personality with me and I can relate to them and I'm getting some value from it. That's pretty easy. And if I look at the titles of those videos, they're pretty good. But then I go to the email and it's just, it doesn't hit me the same way. And I can it, do you think?
Yeah. We forget that email was the very first social media platform, you know, it became.
So what are we doing wrong? Or what do we do? Cause I don't think we're, you know, horribly off from that, or is, cause it can also just be right audience, right time, you know, as well. And I'm just not the right audience for myself right now, you know, or our stuff, you know, our world, because I've had so much of it. I feel like I'm pretty up to speed with all of it. So the value, maybe it's just that the marginal additional value isn't as great as I need it to be right now or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on what you're asking from the person who's sending. So if take email newsletters, which have been all the rage for the past, you know, couple of years. And, you know, arguably when everybody's got them and everybody's sending them, you know, they get devalued along with everything else. But an email newsletter that is actually really, really good that you genuinely want to read, that feels like a packaging, sort of like a YouTube video that's just, this is valuable. Like, and it delivers value consistently and it's sent to me. I didn't have to go and find it. And so I look forward to this and I appreciate it. There are some people who, you know, if I see their newsletter in my inbox, I'm going to read it. Now, even then, though, a lot of them, depending on the niche that they're in, if I'm not as interested in that at this moment, well, then I'm not. But yeah. That's okay, right? Yeah. The same thing would happen with YouTube channels. Yeah. There are other people who, you know, I know them and we have conversations via email. And so they send me an email and I open it because I know the person. I think the ultimate sign of an effective email strategy is that the subject line is fundamentally irrelevant to the open rate. You see the from field and you know that person consistent or that brand consistently delivers like value.
That's a good observation.
Yeah. And so if you just go and look for you, like put yourself in the mind of your customer and say, all right, I'm my customer. And to the extent that you are, then cool, that works. But to say, look at your own inbox and say, what are the emails that I just opened because of who's in the from field and what are they doing? And if you ask that question, I think it'll inform a far better strategy than anything that you're going to read in any book.
Yeah. I like it. Nice. Well, I feel like we had a kind of a good catch-up podcast this time. Just talking about a lot of different stuff and hope you guys enjoyed that and got some value. And if not, that's okay. Cause sometimes at lunch you just talk about stuff. So that's what we did today. But we hope that you enjoyed it. If you did like it, please share it with other people. If you didn't, then listen to the next one because it'll probably be even better. And I think that's it for today, Ryan. Anything else you want to share?
No, sounds great. Welcome back. Glad you're here. And again, happy birthday.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
Hey, Roland Frazier here. If you're looking for a way to grow your business exponentially, to get more customers and ultimately increase your wealth, there's no faster way to do it than to acquire other businesses that already have the customers, products, services, teams, and media that you want. If you want to double your sales, just acquire a company that has the same sales as yours. It sounds simple, but far too many people end up starting new businesses that fail and forget that they could skip all the hard stuff and just acquire one that already exists. There's a reason why private equity firms, family offices, big companies like Apple, Google, and some of the smartest entrepreneurs on the planet do not start new businesses from scratch. They acquire already successful businesses. And when they do it, they instantly increase their sales, their profits. If they want market share, they increase that. They can get new products and services to offer all instantly. Hey, look, 90% of new businesses fail. 90%. Why not acquire an already successful business and increase your chances of success by 900%? What most people don't realize is you can acquire highly profitable businesses with no money out of your own pocket in pretty much any country in the world, regardless of your credit and without having to go find a bunch of investors or needing any experience. Look, I've been acquiring businesses for over 30 years now, and I cover the whole process in my Epic Investing Strategy Training, and I want to give it to you 100% free. Just visit businesslunchpodcast.com/epic to get your free access to my Epic Investing Training right now while it's available.